Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The expression "for the birds" means exactly that. When it comes to the World Bird Sanctuary in St. Louis County, it's all things to all birds, especially the injured or endangered. I spoke recently with two of the folks who make things happen at the sanctuary, and a lot is happening. They are Executive Director Brian Bissonette and Nature Center Supervisor Katrina Whitener, and he explained the word "world" in World Bird Sanctuary.
We're looking at all different kinds of birds of prey from across the globe. We have a few non-native American species that are at our institution as well, but also means some of our work that we try to do from a research perspective is we're trying to look globally as well as helping other countries that have birds of prey that are either endangered or threatened or at least have a negative population trend in their particular countries and try to help out we can with research and education programs as much as we can globally.
Why is it here?
It was started by Walter Crawford. It actually started in his backyard about 40 years ago, and then it became what it is today. So Walter Crawford had a dream, I guess known as the Birdman, so had a passion for especially birds of prey. So he had that dream. He created it in his backyard or started in his backyard, and 40 years later, it is what it is today here in Missouri, in the St. Louis area. And he was a native of St. Louis. That's why it's here.
I think many of us who have been around for a while remember Walter very, very fondly.
Yes.
And very well. He was very good at promoting the sanctuary. There's no question about that. Trina, what brought you into this field? I mean, it's somewhat unusual.
I got into this field partly because my parents were always, like, really interested in animals, my dad especially. He infamously kept a rattlesnake in our garage. Like, this was before I was born, and he had a pet timber rattlesnake in his garage. He was interested in falconry, and so we would sometimes have red-tailed hawks in our house that he used as falconry birds. And I just kind of followed along from there. I always liked being outside, being in the woods, enjoying nature. And then in kindergarten, this was like one of those big changes, but in kindergarten, we get those weekly readers. And Miss Naniga, my kindergarten teacher, read weekly reader to us, and we learned about Lonesome George, who was the Pinta Galapagos tortoise. And she explained to us that when George died, that the last of his species would die and they would completely become extinct. And I was so upset over that as a little kid, because at that point I thought, oh, extinction is just for the dinosaurs and woolly mammoths. And I came home all upset about it, and I just started talking about animals and wouldn't shut up because I didn't want to see it happen to something else.
Well, at the moment, we have one of the animals talking to us.
Yes.
We better explain to our audience what exactly they're listening to in the background here. Brian, why don't you explain about Blue?
Sure. We have a Harris's hawk here. She's about a year old, and we brought her up from the sanctuary to be with us here today. Give us a little some comments from their point of view, right, Blue? And, of course, then she stops talking. Oh, there you go. That's a little bit better. She's a particular interesting species. They live mostly in kind of desert-type environments. They are really the only bird of prey that hunts in family groups. So they're often called the wolf pack of the sky. So they will, as they hunt, because of the open areas that they come from, they realize one bird will run out of energy before it can trap down its prey. So they'll work together to wear out prey. And then finally make the kill and feed their entire family group. And the interesting thing about them as well, unlike a lot of other species, is usually the alpha or the top dog will feed itself first and then those lower on the totem pole. They're the opposite. They make sure those that are sick, elderly, are taken care of first before the stronger birds eat. And the alphas will actually eat last with them. So it's an interesting little type of bird species that we brought here today for.
What is Blue's story? I mean, why is Blue here in the St. Louis area?
Trina can talk a little bit more because I think Trina's kind of known her since she
was
an egg.
Yeah, I've known her since she was a baby.
Yeah.
And Blue, it was actually hatched and raised at World Bird Sanctuary. Like, one of our missions is we captively raise birds of prey, whether it's for reintroduction into the wild, where we've worked a lot with like bald eagles, peregrine falcons, the American barn owl. And then in some cases, we would breed birds for educational purposes. That way you're not taking birds from the wild. There are places where Harris hawks are having problems, especially in like Southern California. So you don't want to advocate that people take birds or any animal out of the wild unless it's absolutely necessary, like what we saw with condors. But Blue is here. She was hatched and raised at World Bird Sanctuary. Her parents are Jack and Cara. And Jack was a very dear Harris Hawk friend of mine. I love that little guy so much. Cara was a former falconry bird, and they produced beautiful Blue as an education bird, along with her little brother Charlie, he's adorable. He's a little ham. But she is an environmental ambassador, or avian ambassador. So she goes to programs, flies over audiences, because we find it's one thing to just talk about a Harris Hawk, like, oh, Harris Hawks are really cool. They hunt in packs. But when you can take Blue to a show and have her fly just inches above people's heads, it really makes an impact. Like, they're like, okay, I saw Blue today, and this is her story, and this is why it's important to protect Harris Hawks. So it forms a more of an emotional connection, and people are more likely to respond to that and help her wild counterparts.
Brian,
so that's why she's here.
As you've indicated, Brian, education is a big part of what you do at the sanctuary.
Absolutely, it is.
How often and who are the people who come to be educated?
Well, we have a couple different opportunities. First, it's just the people that come by the World Bird Sanctuary. They'll have an opportunity to see some of our birds. We also have on the weekend, throughout the summer until Labor Day, on Saturday and Sunday at 11:30 and 2 o'clock on both days, a what we call Amazing Animal Encounter. So they'll have an opportunity to sit in our amphitheater and have a chance to learn about some of these types of birds of prey while they're there, and then also have a chance to look at the rest of the sanctuary as well.
Are birds of prey in any sense threatened as a group?
We've seen a unfortunate negative population trend in a lot of different bird species, especially here in the United States. There's multiple reasons for that. Most people knew that the bald eagle for quite a long time was on the endangered species list. It's not anymore. However, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But for example, the California condor. California condor was becoming extinct. It's still on the endangered species list. They actually had to go out and capture about 250 of the remaining California condors and bring them into captivity so they could actually repopulate the species and then start releasing them back into the wild. And that was still an ongoing effort to try to repopulate that particular bird species out in the West Coast. But there's a lot of other bird species out there that are in danger. A lot of it has to do with loss of habitat. Some of it also has to do with some of the different pesticides and things that we use here in the United States, is just without knowing what impact it has, such as when you have mice or rats that are running around your house, you use the poison to get rid of them. And that's something that takes about, causes internal bleeding on the animal itself. It's not a very pleasant death for the mouse or the rat, but what it does, once that internal bleeding starts, it looks for sources of water because it becomes very thirsty. And it leaves the house, and it lives for about 4 to 5 days after it's ingested the poison. It goes out, drinks whatever it can find, but it also becomes a very easy target for various birds of prey. Specifically here, we've seen a real problem with our barn owls and the loss of barn owls who actually, are right near urban areas. So they go out, they find this easy prey, they go and kill it, bring it up for lunch or dinner, and then they all of a sudden are affected by the poison, often die just by eating one infected mouse. So there's a lot of different things that we do that can cause some of these negative population trends. We have issues with, obviously, trying to keep them away from airports because obviously birds are in the same location as our planes fly. So especially coming in for landing, it's both dangerous for people as well as for that particular bird species. So there's lots of different issues that we have to deal with as urbanization increases and we start losing a lot of habitat and using a lot of different things to try to improve our lives. Sometimes it has a negative impact on them.
Trina, we hear a lot about birds flying into buildings, flying into windows, and the guy wires, for instance, cell phone towers or what have you, anything that might be out there. This is a big problem.
It is, yeah. I know in recent memory, within like the last year or two, we've received bald eagles that have crashed into guy wires, or they've landed on transmission towers or telephone poles, and they'll accidentally shock themselves And we can always tell if it's been an electrocution case or an electrical case because there's charring whenever they come in. And as long as we get them soon enough, if the wound's in the right place, we can save them. But sometimes if the wing is too damaged, they can't fly and you can't save them. So it can be a long, difficult recovery process. Anytime you have burns, it's a long time for them to recover. Collisions with man-made objects is actually the number one reason why we get birds into our wildlife hospital, whether it's vehicle collisions, running into windows during migration, running into the guy wires. Barbed wire fences are really bad, really big hazard for the birds because they run into it and it's bad news.
Well, let me just ask you for a moment about birds on the power lines. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've all seen these pictures of birds on these lines. They seem to be able to do that without any problem whatsoever. But you say that's not the case.
It depends on where they're sitting. If they're able to get the electricity to ground, if they make that connection, and it usually happens when they pop their wings out to go and take off, they'll touch two parts of that structure. So they'll touch that live wire, and then they might touch another piece that the only pathway the electricity now has is it's going to go through their bodies to get to ground, because that's what electricity is always trying to do. It's always trying to get to ground. And if they ground it out, then it's bad news for them.
Yeah. Brian, you mentioned the eagles a moment
yes.
ago. And I gather we've done a pretty good job in this part of the country in preserving that species.
We have. And I think, you know, when we talked about the pesticides, it was really creating problems for them when it came to breeding. The eggs weren't the layer of the egg was becoming so thin that it couldn't incubate the baby. So that was the biggest issue that we had. Problem is now is, and what we have a tendency to forget about, is once, okay, we're off the endangered species list, we're good to go, everything's fine, and we start to forget about it. And we've started to do that now. And one of the things is we still have in law that if you go out and shoot a bald eagle or kill a bald eagle purposely, that you get a $250,000 fine, up to 5 years in jail. Three specific laws, federal laws, that talk to that. Problem is now what has happened is that we have certain institutions that are no longer, that law does not apply to. They've been given exceptions, such as the alternative wind energy industry, who currently has the ability to no longer, if it kills a bald eagle when it puts up a windmill.
Turbine, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't, that law doesn't impact them. And actually, the worst part of that is there's no outside agency that's actually putting any kind of oversight onto those particular energy institutions or organizations, because all they have to do is report the deaths from an internal review. So there's no external organization that's looking at it. So as we look at an organization that's looking to increase its ability to bring power to the United States, and all of a sudden, if you have a huge amount of bald eagles that are killed, it goes against their own interest to report that exact number. So there's some issues whether those exact numbers will be reported. And if there are high numbers, what would the change in our government's regulation for those particular industries be? So that's one major concern that we have. So we're really concerned about what's going to happen with our bald eagle population, which just a few years ago came off the endangered species list. So it's very easy for these animals. They're still in a precarious position right now.
And it's going to get worse because alternative energy and
wind
power is very, very high on the list right now.
Yeah, and there's no – I'm a believer that we need to learn to live in harmony. So I understand moving forward, and you know, I support alternative energy sources, anything that we can advance our ability to improve our infrastructure within our country and provide different ways to move forward. But the big issue we have is nothing's being done to say, okay, we need this kind of thing, but let's do some research and find out what's the best way to ensure we minimize damage that it does to our wildlife or to our natural environment. It's just pretty much just go forward because it's an economic. It's just an economic thought. It's not trying to figure out what that balance should be. So there's no research done on what can we do to ward off birds from turbines. None of that sort of thing is being done prior to putting those up. So that's kind of what we want to advocate for is understanding that we are in favor of those sorts of advancements within the United States, but we believe we need to come up with a balance and do some extra research and find out the best ways that the wildlife can live in harmony with some of those new advances that we have here in the United
States. What can people do who are interested in supporting this effort? What can the average person do? Write the congressman? Is that basically
it? Yeah, write the congressman. I think all of us have done that recently. Mm-hmm. But the other thing people can do, it's all about numbers. You know, it's like anything else in this country. It's a democratic society, and the more people that are interested in something, the larger your voice is, the more attention it gets because, you know, our government has a lot on its plate. I know the congressmen, senators have a very small staff, so there's not a lot of, they can't do everything. So they really have to try to listen to their constituency and really figure out what those particular, the constituency's priorities are so they can prioritize themselves. So it really comes down to people getting out there and asking the question to their congressman, what else can be done to try to ensure that there's a balance between protecting wildlife and advancing in certain areas within the country.
Let's take a break now. We'll do that. We're talking with Brian Bissonette, who is the executive director of the World Bird Sanctuary. Also with us is Trina Whitener. She's the Nature Center supervisor at the sanctuary. We'll come back and continue our conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. We're having a conversation with Trina Whitener and Brian Bissonette of the World Bird Sanctuary, and we are joined by Blue, who has now been taken out of her cage. I want to be sure. How do you tell the difference between him and her, by the way?
The difference between the males and the females? This is something that goes over big at Girl Scout meetings and not so much at the Boy Scout meetings. Generally, with birds of prey or raptors, you look at the size of the birds. And so in birds of prey, it's the girls that are bigger and stronger than the boys. So Blue is a pretty big harris hawk. She's not the biggest we've ever had. We had one named Rifle who was a giant compared to Blue. But we look at the weight of the bird, and we also... So, like, I always like to say, you look for those big old Helga feet. She's got those great big feet. Her talons are really large. Her brother, Charlie, and we were fortunate, you know, we had two birds hatch at nearly the same time. Charlie is her little brother, and he's teeny compared to her, so it was really easy to tell the size difference there. The only other ways is would be you'd have to do, like, a blood test to definitively know. Or wait till someone lays an egg. Like, we had a great horned owl named Arthur once, who
that's
suddenly
that's a
laid
dead
an
giveaway,
egg.
Isn't it,
like,
when they lay the
then
egg?
Then you know. Exactly. It's like when you find a trout in the milk. Arthur laid an egg, so we're like, whoops. So even we don't get it right sometimes. But blood tests will always let you know. And then there are some birds will have a color difference.
Well, that's what I've always heard. Yeah. That the male, if I may say so, is generally a little more colorful than the female.
Yes.
Brian and I are going to preen for a moment here.
That's right. I mean, absolutely right.
He's prettier. Yes. There's a reason why I'm on radio today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Blue here for a moment. Very vocal and has been since she came into the room. Does that mean that she's upset? Does that mean that she's confused by different kinds of surroundings? Or do we know?
Right now, she's actually making kind of her status quo sound. This is almost like a baby noise. And she's still very young. Blue makes kind of this baby noise at humans when she sees us, especially people that she knows. She's always looking for treats. And usually when she goes in her traveling crate and drives anywhere, she's like, oh, we're doing a show. I'm about ready to fly and get some treats. And she's like, okay, guys, what gives? Where are the treats at? Like, I was told there would be cookies. So she's actually just mostly she's pretty content right now. If she's angry, she makes this loud scream. It goes, it's like very sharp, abrupt scream. And we heard her do it for some reason in the van when we were on our way here. Right. We just got going, and all of a sudden she disapproved of something that she saw out the window. I don't even know what it was.
Maybe you had the wrong radio station on the car radio.
That
could be it. Okay, well, Dawn Grifford is the handler for Blue as of the moment. Dawn is wearing a hefty glove, I might say, to protect herself from those talons. Dawn, do you worry at all about being, you know, pecked on the nose with a bird that size?
I don't. Actually, we call the talon, the feet, the business end of the bird of prey. So this is actually the area that we are most interested in keeping ourselves safe from when we're handling a bird. And this glove is three layers of leather so that these beautiful talons don't claw right into my skin. But the beak, I mean, we do worry about the beak. It is a major tool of a bird of prey for ripping and tearing, but they generally don't lash out with it as much as they do their feet.
Well, you seem very comfortable with Blue, and I must say that Blue seems very comfortable with you. Let's get back to what's going on here in Missouri. Are there any birds of prey or other species in Missouri that are threatened at the moment that we should be concerned about?
Well, what we've done is we've taken a look. Luckily for us, when you look at it from a national perspective, we don't have any except for the California condor and the spotted owl nationally that are either threatened or endangered right now. But what we've seen is a lot of species that have a serious negative population trend, such as the American kestrel. Over the last 20 years, it's about down 33% of its wild population here in the United States. So we've seen that it really change in their population in the United States. So what we've done at World Bird Sanctuary is we've identified really eight bird species that we're going to try to focus our efforts, both in research, education, and then our propagation efforts to breed those particular bird species for reintroduction back into the wild. So we have the American kestrel, we have the long-eared and the short-eared owl, which are kind of a competitor for the great horned owl. So they lose a lot of habitat that way. So as our habitat starts to, or we start to shrink their habitat, those bigger owls have a tendency to bully the smaller ones out. So that's part of the problem with those. But we have also the shallow-tailed kite, which really we see just in Florida and a lot in Central South America and Latin America. So we're looking at trying to reintroduce that species, hopefully back into this area as well, because it's really lost its footprint here in the United States. We also have gone a little away in one type of bird species from bird of prey to another bird that's really having trouble with its current population trends, and that's the greater prairie chicken. So there's some issues with that, especially since a lot of the hunters want to go out and go after those particular bird species, and there's some rules and regulations, so those are kind of up for interpretation and what can be done to ensure that we don't want to interrupt with certain things that happen with hunters, et cetera, and take that ability away from them. But we all want to make sure that we're not doing it to a point where we put that particular bird species into a threatened condition here in the United States. And, of course, we have the bald eagle, which we kind of talked about already. Burrowing owl is another one that is kind of an interesting little owl. It doesn't fly much at all. It kind of lives in burrows, hence the name. And little family packs, got these long, skinny legs, and it's the small body, so it's a tiny little animal. It's actually, people love to see them. So we're going to try to do some work with that particular bird species as well, since they're really having trouble with habitat loss out in the western part of the country. And then the last one, which I might get tongue twisted on, but the Phryginus hawk is the last one, which is a northern bird species. It's a rather large hawk species. And again, that's another one that we've identified that has had some negative population trends. So we're trying to do some more look into that particular hawk. It's a rather large type of hawk species. So it's a nice one to kind of look at as well as a big, powerful type of bird. So
they're fascinating. All of them, all species are fascinating to watch. And Trina, you know, when my kids were growing up, we had a bird feeder in the backyard. And it was just, as I say, fascinating to watch the various types of birds come in. What advice do you have? Would you give people who would like to set up something like that?
The first bit of advice that I would give is make sure that if you're going to set it up, keep them clean. You want to make sure that you're cleaning them with a light bleach solution every so often, because anytime you put out a food source that congregates animals, it can, if things get icky, it can lead to disease. And so you wouldn't want to set up in a gross situation. So you want to make sure that you're keeping your bird baths and your bird feeders clean, so you put the food in there, especially if it's really rainy, wet weather.
Do you need to have a bird bath? I mean, or can you let them just deal with that naturally?
Yeah, you can let them do it naturally. Some people like bird baths. I find bird baths, they're cool, but, man, I am so clumsy. Like, I've broken a few in my lifetime and nearly broken my foot at the same time, so I just kind of let them find their own water. Sometimes I'll put something out if it's really hot, but another bit of advice that I would give is keep your bird feeders away from large picture windows. You know, like we talked about earlier, collisions with man-made objects, and everybody wants to have their bird feeders near the picture windows, but that reflective surface, if you can't help it, you can put strips flaps on there that let the birds know it's not something that they can fly through. If a Cooper's hawk shows up and scatters your little songbirds that are eating, in a panic, they might smack into that picture window and hurt or even kill themselves, which is nice for the Cooper's hawk. He's like, ka-ching, but that would be some of the advice that we give.
How about getting rid of the family cat?
Yes, that's the other thing. I love cats. Yeah. Anybody that knows me knows I love cats. Like, I'm helping out a little lost kitten right now, trying to find him a home, so I love cats. But keep your cats indoors. They kill millions, if not billions, of birds annually. Not to mention all the little reptiles that they'll kill too. Like, you might think, oh, my cat is so sweet and innocent, he doesn't kill anything but time. When you're not looking, they're conducting nefarious actions that are just normal to them.
We with our bird feeder, we also had a cat. It was an indoor cat, but it would sit at the window and watch the birds in the feeder, and we called that television for the cat.
Oh, that's right.
It would sit there for hours and watch all of this going on, just licking its chops. But fortunately, we didn't have any incidents. What else can we talk about that you have at the bird sanctuary that might draw people there? And tell us where it is, Brian.
Okay, yeah, it's the address is 125 Bald Eagle Ridge Road.
Of
but if you get off of, if you want to put in the old GPSs with our technology today, it'd take you right there. But if you get off of, it's at the intersection of 44 and 141 out in Valley Park. Mm-hmm. So it depends if you're coming from St. Louis, you'll go right and you'll make follow the signs. You'll get off in the immediate right after you get onto 141. Then you'll come to a T-intersection, you'll make a left, just follow that road straight in. We're right next to Lone Elk Park, so a lot of people know where Lone Elk Park is as well. So it's not difficult to find. We've got some signs out there on 44 to help people find us where we are. And then, of course, with technology today, just put in World Bird Sanctuary in your Google Maps, and you'll be able to find exactly where we are.
And some of the other things that you're doing out there, I know you've got a hospital that you deal with.
We
do.
We have a rehabilitation hospital, so if anyone finds an injured bird near there, they can give us a call. Either they can either bring it in or we can go out and get it for you and try to bring it in and see what we can do with that particular injured bird species. We have about 400 birds that come through the hospital every year. So, and we have a pretty good success record on those that come in that have a chance to be rehabilitated and put back into the wild. Unfortunately, some of them, once their injury is too great, even though we're able to save the particular bird, they're just not they're not able to go back out into the wild. So then we try to give them the best home that they can there at the sanctuary and use them for people to at least understand what type of bird that is and see them in our sanctuary.
Yeah. Trina, another reason that people might want to set up some sort of a bird feeding operation in the backyard, I don't want to throw you a curveball on this, but I was listening to NPR the other day, and they were talking about birds and dinosaurs. And I think most people have heard how the skeleture of birds is exactly identical to dinosaurs.
Yeah. Dromaeosaurids.
So you're really watching a dinosaur when you're watching a bird. But they were saying the other day that they have concluded now with research that they're doing that dinosaurs, you know, the things we see in Jurassic Park, were probably covered in feathers number one, and probably didn't growl. They would coo like, you know, a mourning dove or something like that.
More bird-like noises,
Especially later on in the period of time that the dinosaurs were around is when you started to see that, when you saw the raptors, hence the name raptor, when you start seeing those. So all those raptors that you see and you saw in Jurassic Park that would go after the Tyrannosaurus Rex, right, those through the pack hunters, those are the ones that they look in. So those were covered in feathers, and that's where the birds actually came from, specifically those birds of prey. And for a time frame, birds ruled Earth in between the time of the end of the dinosaur and actually mammals taking over as the dominant type of species on planet Earth. So there's a short time frame that actually the birds.
So I'm looking at blue and I'm looking at a dinosaur.
Basically, you're looking at the remnants of a dinosaur.
She was actually named after the Velociraptor from the latest Jurassic Park movie. Yeah, and Charlie, her brother Charlie, was named after the Velociraptors in that movie. But yeah, if you look back, like the Dromaeosaurids, which includes dinosaurs like Velociraptor, like Utah Raptor, Gallimimus. Like right now, as I'm looking at Blue, the way her body posture is, the way they tuck their wings up, it's very raptor-like, which raptor comes from the word to seize, to grab, to steal, or take. Velociraptor, for instance, means speedy thief, and it actually referred to their front limbs on a velociraptor or gallimimus that they could reach out and grab things with it. Everyone's really fascinated with the killing claw on, like, Velociraptor, which that's the example I'll use the most because it's the one everyone knows. But if you look at the structure of this bird's feet on a dinosaur like Velociraptor, that killing claw was the second toe. So if we're looking at Blue's foot, the back toe is toe number one. That's called the hallux. On a dinosaur, that was moved further up on the ankle of the animal. And then toe number two is that innermost toe on, whether we're looking at a red-tailed hawk, a Harris hawk, a golden eagle. You can really see it on a golden eagle. That toe is shortened, and that claw is gigantic. It's a lot larger than the other talons that we see there. And just like with a Velociraptor or Deinonychus, they would use that as a killing claw. These birds, that's the claw that does all the damage. Whenever they grab onto something, it's the back talon, the hallux, toe number one, and then toe number two, that innermost toe. So when they grab on, that's your moneymaker right there. Those are your moneymakers.
Well, I much prefer them the size of Blue as opposed to a couple hundred times.
Exactly.
Brian Bissonette and Trina Whitener, thank you so much. This has been fascinating, and we've learned an awful lot today about birds and dinosaurs. That's Executive Director Brian Bissonette and Nature Center Supervisor Trina Whitener of the World Bird Sanctuary, with special guest, Blue. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.